I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to The Connection. Last month at the Democratic National Convention, Gus Walz, the 17-year-old son of vice presidential candidate Tim Walz, jumped to his feet while his father was speaking from the podium and tearfully shouted, "That's my dad." While many were touched by the purity of his emotions, social media was less kind, ridiculing him for his outpouring of love. Then an interesting thing happened. Many of those who shamed Gus were shamed into taking down their posts. It's not easy to be a boy or young man in America today. It also looks like the loneliness epidemic has affected men more than women. The Survey Center for American Life found that men have fewer close friends than they did in 1990, and that just 22% of men seek help from their friends, compared to twice that a generation ago. Our guest, Niobe Way, has been talking and listening to boys and young men for four decades and says they are experiencing a crisis of connection, seen in rising rates of suicide, depression, and mass violence. Her new book, Rebels with a Cause, Reimagining Boys, Ourselves, and Our Culture, explores male friendship and something she calls boy culture that devalues soft feelings and caricatures masculinity. Niobe Way is a professor of developmental psychology at New York University and founder of the Project for the Advancement of Our Common Humanity. She joins us today on The Connection to talk about identity, belonging, attachment, connection, and masculinity for boys and men. Niobe Way, nice to have you with us on The Connection.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. It's really a pleasure.
Well, I should say that we are two women talking about boys and men, but I am also interested in what has sparked your almost lifelong curiosity and interest in the lives, the inner lives of boys and men.
Yeah, it really came from in 1980. I was a doctoral student at Harvard, and I was working in schools as part of my doctoral degree and listening to young people. And I came in really interested in, as a grad student, of adding the stories of my explicit interest at the time was on working class young people and bringing their voices into human development, because human development, the field, is still almost exclusively focused on middle and upper class kids. So I was interested in bringing the voices of working class youth into our understanding of what it means to be human. And I started to listen to boys and girls and non-gender conforming kids, all sorts of kids in the late 80s. And what I struck me the most was what I was hearing from the boys and young men, which was their desire for friendship, their struggles with friendship, sometimes having positive friendships. But friendships basically dominated their narratives when they would talk to me about what they were experiencing or struggling with. And I was really struck by, this is, you know, a long time ago, this is 1988. I was really struck by when I would take my classes on adolescent development or learn about children in my graduate level courses, they weren't talking about what I was hearing. So there was a gap between what I was hearing from actually listening to young people and what the sort of, the so-called literature was that I was being taught, educated by in my graduate school. So it became a lifelong passion, not really just initially about boys and young men, but about why developmental psychology and our understanding of humans doesn't actually listen to young people.
Well, let me pick up on several of those things. One about friendship, and I will read a couple of comments that boys said to you about their intense feelings about friendship. But does investigating friendship take you into the kind of inner lives of teenage boys and young men?
Yep. Are you going to read this first, or do you want me to?
No, go ahead. Go ahead and answer, and then I will read some.
I mean, what became obvious? Again, my interest. You know, I have to repeat this because it's important to understand. My interest didn't come initially about boys or about friendships. I discovered that by listening. So the friendships end up also being a core topic. We still, as a field of psychology, research psychology, we still don't value friendships as critical to our well-being, our health and well-being. And in a culture, we'll talk about that later, but what I'm calling boy in quotations because it's not a real boy culture that doesn't value friendships, that doesn't value our soft sides, means we're going to have a problem with connection. So friendships, I ended up realizing, was the sort of secret sauce to our feelings of connection. But if we lived in a culture that didn't value them, especially for boys and young men, then we're going to have problems, especially with boys and young men. Right, because friendships are key. We now know that in the research. I just have to add this before you quote from them.
Sure.
Friendships are key to everything. They're a key to social emotional well-being, to our physical health. They're even more important according to the data, than romantic partners. Right, because romantic partners oftentimes can entail sort of more toxic engagement with each other at times. Friendships are much more likely to engage more deeply and have less toxic qualities to them, because in some ways we choose our friends constantly over our lives. So the idea is that friendships are really the source of our health and well-being. And so a lot of my work is about really focusing on not just boys and young men, but to everybody, to value their friendships. Fundamentally, it should be more important, honestly, than anything else, is having positive friendships that are mutually supportive and deep and meaningful and that we can rely on in times of need. Okay, now I'll let you quote from the book.
Yeah, let me quote, because as I say, these boys are just so eloquent. This is Justin. He's 15 years old when he says, and I'm quoting here, "My best friend and I love each other." That's it. You have this thing that is deep, so deep it's within you, you can't explain it. I guess in life, sometimes two people can really, really understand each other and really have trust, respect, and love for each other. It just happens. It's human nature. I mean, that is one of the most purest expressions of absolute and utter love, right?
Yeah. I mean, I still get the chills. He said that I think it was an interview in 1989. He said that in 1998. I just want to say to your listeners, I have been hearing similar kinds of quotes from thousands of boys around the world, by the way, because I do work in China as well, for almost four decades. That's what, as I tell young boys, that's what teenage boys sound like when given a safe space to say what they really feel rather than what they're supposed to feel. So when you give them a safe space, meaning when you ask the question in a way in which they won't be judged, that's what they sound like. That's what they come out with. It's not just a special boy of Justin. Thousands of boys sound like that when given the opportunity to talk about what they really feel. And that's where my passion comes from. Because the idea that we're telling stories about boys, and I put it in quotations, that have nothing to do with real boys, is literally what is at the root of all of our problems, is that we're telling a story about a human, right, which is a boy, that has nothing to do with what they're really like as humans. And that's getting into trouble, and that's what's leading to the violence, the mass violence, domestic violence, all sorts of violence. You're seeing it, that we're raising our boys to go against their nature. And in turn, it's having a massive negative impact, of course, on girls and women, as well as, and this is, I just want to throw this in because it's sure. an important part of the conversation, that boy culture, what I call, again, the quotation is around the word boy because it's not a real boy. It's a cartoon character that only values their hard side. So it's not a real boy. It's a cartoon character. In boy culture, though, we are so obsessed with modeling our lives after the stereotypic boy that girls and young women are now also feeling pressure to man up, that they're feeling pressure to only show their hard side. I have so many young women that now tell me they don't need relationships. They just want hookup sex, or they don't need, you know, they try to cover over their sensitivity, or they're embarrassed by their sensitivity, and sensitivity is critical for human relationships. So we actually have a whole culture that's affecting, you know, boy culture is affecting everybody, but obviously more boys and young men, because it's all about being a boy or being a man. So, you know, so obviously it's more on them. But the idea is that we are so obsessed with this hard side of ourselves that we have dehumanized, in essence, everyone, because we naturally have a hard and soft sides. And I have to say, that's what we learned from boys and young men, is that we are naturally hard and soft. It's not masculine and feminine. It's not gendered. Thinking and feeling are not gendered. Thinking is not masculine. Feeling is not feminine. It's human. It's human. So we have gendered what is actually just human qualities. The need for independence. The need for connectedness. The need for autonomy. The need for interdependence. Right? Stoicism and vulnerability. I could go on and on. Thinking and feeling.
Sure, sure. Let me just jump in here, because there's an interesting kind of follow-up to what Justin says here. And you write that you read to a class of seventh grade boys what he said about friendship. And they started to giggle, and they, you know, sort of making sounds as if he was gay or something like that. But then you kept the class in, and they began to talk about how they felt about their friends. They were vulnerable about how they felt about their own friends based on what Justin had said.
Yeah, I mean, this was so stunning. I still get the chills also when you read these things. It still affects me because I remember it so clearly. And I've just heard it so many times. What's the most amazing thing? This may be the most important thing I'm going to say in this interview, is how easy it is to change the culture. And I'll tell you why. So that story is, I'm sitting in a classroom, and this has happened many times, but it's a story that's so powerful. It's 24 boys. They're all sitting there 12 years old, okay? They're in seventh grade. And I read that quote that you just read, and the first reaction is they all start cracking up. And I know why they're cracking up, because I know we live in a homophobic society that genders that kind of talking. So, right, so I say, why are you laughing? I want them to articulate it. So they say, they won't say it. And then I say, come on, I know why you're laughing. Just tell me why you're laughing. Why is it funny? And they said, well, the dude sounds gay. And I said, well, look, I don't look at sexuality in my studies. I just talk to boys about their friendships, and girls too, by the way. And this is what Justin just said is what over 80% of teenage boys sound like during teenagehood. And they looked at me, and I just still remember these 24 boys, 12-year-olds. They looked at me with their mouths slightly agape, and they said, for real? And I said, oh, yeah. That's what teenage boys sound like. And just that statement, which is essentially what I did, is I normalized that way of expressing yourself. I all of a sudden had, within 1 second, I had one boy in the corner of the room say, actually, Justin sounds like me. And started talk about his own friendship, but that he struggled to have that kind of friendship. He used to have it. He struggled to have it. And then I even had, this was the most stunning thing, two boys in the classroom share with each other that they had broken up because the other boy had hurt his feelings and that they had broken up in their friendship. So I'm just telling your audience, it is easy to change the culture. All you have to do is normalize it. And I'm going to repeat it again because it's such an important message, what boys teach us. Thinking and feeling is not a gendered characteristic. It's a human characteristic. And friendships, needing close, emotionally intimate friendships that you can share your secrets with, is a human need, not a gendered need.
We're almost up at a break here, but it sounds like what you also did was to give them permission to be vulnerable, to share how they felt. We got about 30 seconds before our break.
Okay, I normalized it. I normalized it. I normalized it. I didn't just give them permission. I said, right? I did give them permission, but I did it by saying, this is normal. What you're feeling is normal. You're not alone. And I have a story to tell after the break.
I do as well. Let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation with Naomi Way. And she's got a brand new book. It's called Rebels with a Cause, Reimagining Boys, Ourselves, and Our Culture. And she's a professor of developmental psychology at New York University, also founder of the Project for the Advancement of Our Common Humanity. And we're talking about what she has learned talking with and listening to teenage boys and young men. Much more after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
You're listening to The Connection here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Naomi Way about her new book, and it's called Rebels with a Cause, Reimagining Boys, Ourselves, and Our Culture. Right before the break, I read a quote from Justin when he was 15 years old. You then quote Justin when he is 17 years old, and this is what he says about friends. He says, it's like best friends become close friends become general friends, and then general friends become acquaintances. And your book is about what happens between those sort of early years of adolescence and the late years of adolescence and into young adulthood. What happens to men's and boys' friendships as they seem to dissipate and disappear and have less importance? What is happening during those critical years?
Yeah, and I would say they don't have less importance. What happens is they start to struggle. And the reason they start to struggle, and this is where sort of Rebels really goes off on, and the notion of boy culture, is living in a culture that doesn't value what humans need, including boys and young men. So if we don't value friendships, if we don't value sensitivity, if we don't value the relational skills necessary to make friendships, we're going to have problems. And that's what we're seeing in our culture today. So the idea is, as boys become men, they enter into a culture, a very ferocious boy culture, meaning you got to emphasize just your hard side and not your soft side. Because if you emphasize your soft side, you're not a boy, you're not a man. I mean, that's what's so stunning. It's not just that you're soft. You're not a man if you have a soft side, but soft side is necessary for your full humanity. So when we, right, when they reach late adolescence, they get that message. And so what they do is they start checking out, literally checking out of their need for those friendships, right? But they gave us the warning early on. They said early on in 13, 14, if I didn't have friendships, I would go wacko. I would want to kill myself. And guess what happens for those boys? Some of those boys at 16 and 17, the isolation, the feeling that nobody understands them, that their feelings are weird, their desire for friendship is weird. They, you know, some of them unfortunately die by suicide, or they attempt to die by suicide. And in the most extreme isolated kids, and I have a chapter on mass shooters in my book, you know, they commit violence, homicide toward other people. So the idea is that what boys teach us very simply, they teach us that it is human to want close relationships. We need them our whole lives, not just any relationship. Friendships is critical to our health and well-being. And if we live in a culture that doesn't value that, we go, in the quote boys, we go wacko. Right. We go crazy, which is what I think we're seeing a lot of in all sorts of ways with our violence patterns and our right. I mean, people going wacko. And the idea is we don't value it. And the thing that's so, so upsetting to me to watch is now we're not just seeing it among boys and young men. We're seeing it among all people that we are going wacko because we're not valuing what we most want, which is each other. And I just have to say, the story I wanted to say before the break, because I want to add it right in here. So I remember presenting this finding about, you know, in the study from the original study that I refer to in Deep Secrets, my previous book was based on about 150 boys followed over about 5 or 6 years. Rebels is based on bringing all my work together over 40 years. So it's my manifesto of what I've learned from boys and young men over 40 years. When I was presenting my work in the last 5 years or so, I was presenting it. Sometimes I present to young people, which is I love presenting to young people because it's the audience I'm trying to speak to. And I remember a teenage boy raising his hand and he said, ma'am, who did you write this book for? And he was talking about Deep Secrets. And I said, I was sort of caught off guard because I wasn't ready for that question. It was such a deep question. And I said, actually, I wrote it for parents and teachers. And he looked at me like I had just offended him. And he said, why didn't you write it for us? And I looked at it, I totally flushed. And I said, what do you mean? He said, because then we wouldn't feel so alone. And what's incredible, this is what's so incredible. I want to communicate this very clearly to your listeners. Every single boy and young man I have ever spoken to, and now it's in the thousands that I follow over years, and I work in schools now, I've been working in schools for the last decade, says that they think that they're the only one who has these feelings. They and their friends, their weirdo friends, and I'm saying that in quotations, are the only ones that have a soft side, that it's unusual for boys to have soft sides. Mothers say in a beautiful book called The Mama's Boy Myth, the author said to me, which I love this quote, I quote it in Rebels. She said, I knew I had my book, The Mama's Boy Myth, when my 400th mother said, well, my boy is sensitive, but I know boys typically aren't. And that I knew I had my book. Because the thing is, we're telling thin stories. We're telling thin stories, which I can talk about what I mean by that. We're telling thin stories, not only about boys and young men, but about all of us, that our soft side somehow is less important and that it's girly and gay, you know, and in a culture that's misogynist and homophobic, that's an insult. So the idea is our soft side is seen as sort of lame. And the question is, if a culture, I mean, think about it, in a culture that thinks that our soft sides, our sensitivity, our ability to read emotions, our ability to tune to the other person's needs is lame, we're going to have problems.
Let me pick on a couple of things because you're raising such important points here, and I don't want them to get lost here. But one, I mean, I do feel as if there is more openness in the culture for at least for women, for certain parts of gay life. I think, you know, people can live more openly now than they did. Is there something, though, about the way we send messages to boys and young
yes.
men about
yes.
what it is to be masculine, that there's some kind of a box, you know, that yes. we put them yes. and put their definition of masculinity in that has made it hard for them to transition into this newer, more open world?
Yeah. So remember, in when we swim in water we can't see, which is what we're doing. We're not seeing the waters in which we swim. That is living in a so-called, again, boy culture. Again, boy is the only one it's put in quotation marks, that values the hard over the soft. Who's it going to affect most if we value the hard over the soft? It's going to affect the gender that we think is only hard, that is the stereotypic boy. So boys and men suffer in this way, social-emotionally, because they're only supposed to have a hard side. They don't suffer in terms of getting the powerful jobs, right? Especially white privileged men,
sure.
because having a hard side is what gets you in the door in powerful jobs. So the idea is having a hard side is great for certain things. And I'm not flipping the hierarchy and putting soft on top, but I'm just saying it's, you know, they benefit in that way. They don't benefit social emotionally because if you just have a hard side, you can't make connection. So they suffer more. What's happening with women, why they're suffering less social and emotionally, you know, they're not necessarily getting the top job, but they're suffering less social emotionally, is they are given more room to actually have a soft and a hard side. So they can actually be proud that they're able to read emotions well. And they're even stereotyped as being able to read emotions well. And then they also have a hard side. But what's happening with girls and women, which is a different interview, but I think it's interesting. There's so much emphasis on the hard side, the STEM fields, et cetera, and nobody's encouraging things like going into teaching, going into healthcare professions, going into the caring professions for anybody, even girls and women. So boys and men suffer more in this because they only are supposed to be hard sides. And as long as we don't see the problem, we keep on saying things like, I want to pick on for a second the concept of toxic masculinity. Because I'm oftentimes assumed to be saying that argument, and I'm not. I don't like the phrase toxic
masculinity. I was
going
to ask you whether what you felt about that phrase, toxic
masculinity. No, I feel very strongly against it, and I'll tell you why. The reason is it sounds like the problem, first of all, is men, and the problem is a kind of, and what's wrong is masculinity is problematic. What I'm trying to say is, in a culture, right, it's not about people, it's about a culture that we've all co-constructed, in a culture that values only one side of our humanity, the hard side, the thinking side, the side that needs autonomy, the side that can be stoic, the side, right, that wants to have a lot of money, all those kinds of things that we see as hard, the science, you know, hard science side. If we only value that in our humanity, what happens, right, is that men suffer particularly in social emotionally, and then that leads to all sorts of bad things, including violence. And so that creates problems, right? Toxic masculinity is just the extreme version of the hard side of humans. And so we got to get out of that language of blaming men or women or non-gender conforming people. We have to get out of that because we all have, and this is the hard message I'm going to say, which some readers will maybe bristle at. I want us all to take responsibility for the way we perpetuate so-called boy in quotation marks culture. The way we privilege academic achievement over friendships, the way, according to a Harvard study, parents privilege academic achievement over kindness. I mean, come on, a culture that privileges academic achievement over kindness, that's going to be a super messed up culture. So the idea is that, of course, boys and men suffer more in boy culture, but the solution isn't to blame them. Because that just makes them feel like they're now being put on the bottom of the hierarchy and we're flipping the hierarchy. You know what I mean? We're putting the soft and the women on top and men on the bottom and their hard sides. No. We don't want to flip the hierarchy. We don't want to put soft on top and hard on bottom. We don't want to put women on top and men on bottom. None of that. We want to have a culture that values both our hard and our soft sides. Stop calling it masculine and femininity.
Sure.
It's not. It's just human, right? Value both the yin and the yang. Chinese medicine has this very clearly. The yin and the yang of humanity, which is the hard side and the soft side. We need them both. We need sensitivity to be stoic. We need stoicism to be sensitive. I mean, the reality is they work together. We need independence and connectedness, right? We think and feel at the same time. All neuroscientists tell us that. There's no such thing as thinking without feeling or feeling without thinking. So the idea is that we do it, they're connected. So it's the yin and the yang.
Sorry, let me just jump in here, only because you're throwing a lot of stuff at us, and I'm trying to keep up.
Sorry,
I want to make sure that our listeners keep up as well. But is this something new? I mean, the cultures are always changing because, history happens, technology happens, all sorts of things, revolutions happen. Is this something new that has created this crisis that you're talking about?
Yeah. So I'm going to now say something that people, I want your listeners to hear what I'm saying, because it may sound like it's a troublesome thing to say, but I'm going to say it because it's in the way that it is intended. So since the 1980s, so basically when you look at the data, the sense of connection and friendships, where you see the biggest drop is from the 80s. So from the 80s till now is when you start to see the decline. We don't have a lot of the data earlier than the 80s, so you don't really know. So really when I say it's declined, I'm talking primarily from the 80s. And in the 80s, we had, Reaganomics, we had income inequality for the first time in dramatic ways, more dramatic than even previously. And so we started to get a culture that was definitely valuing money over people. And so the idea is that since the 80s, we started to disconnect from each other. Hmm. Then this is the interesting thing. And this is the part that's a little bit controversial to say, but I want you to hear it in terms of my love of humans, all humans. In the movement to allow for different gender identities and different ways of thinking of yourself, including in some ways the most radical rebels we have, which are people who identify as non-gender conforming, what's happened is that a lot of my students identify as they, for example, which is a beautiful thing to do, to just reject the whole gender binary. But what's happened in that conversation is we think the problem is our pronouns rather than how we've constructed the he, she.
Hmm.
So what's happened is in our movement towards young people who say, they are identifying as a they, as right, that's their pronoun. What's happened is implicit in that is if you don't identify as a they and you're a he or a she and you identify as a he or a she, you align with the gender stereotype around that he or she. And so you're having in my classroom, I write this about in my book, in my classroom, when I ask them to define masculinity and femininity at this point, they sound like what I imagine was in my mother's generation in the 50s. I mean, it sounds so old-fashioned what they associate with masculinity and femininity. So masculinity is taking responsibility, being smart, hardworking. Femininity is caring about makeup, only caring about you, what you look like, being basically a little bit not very intelligent. I mean, it's unbelievable. I thought this was my mother's generation.
Hmm.
So in some weird way, we are advancing. I'm not saying we're just going backwards because that would be ridiculous. We're about to hopefully have a first woman president, obviously. We are going forward in a woman of color. So the idea is we are obviously progressing with women, gay people, people with different identities. We're obviously progressing. But what we're not doing, because we don't see ourselves, we don't see the culture, we're not recognizing that it's gender. I have to sound like an academic for a second. Gender is socially constructed. It's not the same thing as sex. So sex is a he or she. It has to do with chromosomes, right? But the idea is gender is constructed. So we've constructed a he and a she, and we're going backwards in terms of how we think about it. So we think he is someone who has a hard side, mostly only a hard side, and a she is mostly a soft side. That's just not human. All he's and she's have a hard and a soft side, and we have to value both of it. So you get what I see. It's what I'm saying is stop seeing it as a group problem. It's a cultural problem. And what we can do is once we see the nature of the problem, a boy culture that doesn't value half of our humanity, our soft sides, we can start creating homes, schools, and workplaces that nurture both sides of our humanity, both our capacity to listen with curiosity and be sensitive to another person's feelings, and at the same time be stoic, right, and think clearly and think sort of objectively as best as possible. I mean, all those good qualities of our hard sides.
Well,
so we can change it.
Yeah, and let me jump in again, because I think it's interesting when you see, and this is still true today, men dominate the business world. They dominate the political world. More men who are presidents of colleges. So clearly there is success that comes for men that doesn't come in the same way for women. Absolutely. But at the same time, you know, you see when you look at school dropout and school achievement and problems, I guess, sort of at the lower end, for lack of a better word, you see boys and young men. There's this incredible split between the upper echelons and the lower echelons.
Yeah, but it's just incredible because what we've done, we're so wacko, to use the boys' term, we are so wacko that we now think things like, and I've heard this from teenagers, it's not from me, nothing I say is my opinion, by the way, it's all coming directly from the mouths of young people. We think reading is feminine. We have feminized reading. You know, we have feminized paying attention. We have feminized all the kinds of things. You even see it in the people who write about boys. Right? We feminize things that are not feminine. They're just part of our capacities as humans. So once you feminize reading and paying attention and being serious and doing your homework, and you think that's girly and gay to do your homework, then you're in trouble, because then boys do not feel like they can connect. The other thing is, if you only value the STEM fields, how about all the boys and young men who aren't interested in STEM, who aren't interested in math and science? How about the boys who want to become artists, painters, healthcare workers, nurses, teachers? What happened to them? And I think those are the boys, I would guess, that the boys that are most likely to drop out is where the topic's being discussed because it's so math and science obsessed at this point that doesn't resonate with them. They don't find it interesting. You know, and even going back to, I'll say something very old-fashioned. You know, when we started getting rid of our, what I would call our vocational, the way Europe does it, our vocational professions, you know, building things, creating things, all those things that men and women and non-gender conforming young people love to do of all sorts. But if your education is only math, science, I mean, imagine how many kids we're excluding, particularly boys and young men, who says if you don't do science, then you're not a man, then you're not successful. Or if you don't go into tech or computer science, you're not really a guy. And if you want to be a nurse, I don't think so. You know, and if you look
except
at the
there
job,
are plenty of, I mean, there are more and more male nurses. We're almost having a break here, but it's
oh,
not,
yeah.
it's
oh,
not like there are men in the nursing profession.
Exactly. And there's a lot of male teachers, too. But I'm just saying, generally, when you look right, when you look at the conversation, you know, like we have a desperate need for more teachers. Teachers are leaving professions in droves. And that's another interview.
Sure.
But the idea is that, you know, we need male teachers. We certainly need men of color as teachers. And if we actually valued teaching, we paid them, a decent wage, we could get many more men of color into teaching. But we don't value teaching, and we see it as a soft profession. And men of color are trying to make a living wage.
And we gotta take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. Our guest is Niobe Way. The book is called Rebels with a Cause, talking about boys and men. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's type.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to The Connection here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Talking with Niobe Way, we are talking about the fact that she has spent decades listening to boys and young men and says they are experiencing a crisis of connection driven in part by this narrow view we have of masculinity. Her new book is titled Rebels with a Cause, Reimagining Boys, Ourselves, and Our Culture. And she joins us to talk about something that she calls boy culture, which values thinking over feeling, self-reliance over dependence, how it hurts boys, men, and the rest of us. Naomi, we have about 15, 20 minutes before we have to say goodbye, but it sounds like what happens when boys kind of buy into this boy culture, as you have described it, in a sense become the stereotype that we have been talking about.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. I mean, essentially, it's the stereotype is not a reflection of real boys, but they can't become that way as they get older. Absolutely.
You mentioned, and you do have a chapter on mass shootings, and I'm thinking, you know, sadly, the most recent mass shooting at Appalachia High School, involving, again, a teenage boy. We don't know much about him, but he's clearly a lonely kid. There were family problems. Feels like he's emotionally shut down, the little that I have read about him. Should we be surprised at this level of mass shootings that we're seeing either in schools or out in the community done by young men?
Yeah, I mean, the fact of the matter is that we are, you know, we don't see ourselves as a culture. We don't see the waters in which we swim. So we will continue to get mass shootings because these are boys. They do tell us directly this in their manifestos. They want deep connection. They can't find it. They're oftentimes boys who've been bullied and nobody cares, and they treat them as if they're loners. And that loneliness turns to anger. And then they want to get revenge. I mean, you know, essentially they're trying to get on top of the hierarchy. I talk a lot about in the book about the hierarchy of humanness and qualities. They're trying to get on top of the hierarchy and be seen as equally human. And they feel like they've been put on the bottom of the hierarchy, and they think their violence will get them on top, even though ironically it ends up, you know, they die many times. But the idea is that these are just, it's going to continue to happen until we understand that we have to create a culture that values all humans equally, and all human, and both our hard and our soft sides equally.
Well, and you say that when you see problems in school, serious problems in school, maybe even dropping out of school, or some of this violence, that it's this time of life in a young boy when friendship loses, close friendship loses the kind of value it had, the meaning it had to them when they were much younger.
Well, no, it's not that it doesn't change in the meaning. I mean, that's why they go, you know, that's why they be some few boys become violent, and many boys, unfortunately, are choosing, right, to die by suicide or attempt suicide. So it's not that the meaning changes. It's that they find it impossible to find the friends they're looking for because they have been, right, it's been seen as a weird thing to want. And so then people, they don't want to be weird. They don't want to, right, they think they are weird. And that nobody's responding to their needs because they're all telling them, you know, essentially just man up. And I know a lot of these things are, again, told directly by not only kids who do bad things, but also young men who actually have found friendships and have a long time of friendships, you know, how essential those friendships are for all aspects of their well-being.
Well, you mentioned man up, and I wonder when boys are told, or even young men, teenage boys are told, don't cry, man up. What happens to them when we tell them that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's obviously negative, but I think it's deeper than that. I think what we're not recognizing, and that what you see in our listening project we've been doing in schools, which we can talk about at some point, is that boys are naturally emotionally and relationally intelligent. That's natural. Okay. They have incredible ability to read other people's emotions and to attune to it. So when we tell them that that part of them is kind of lame and in fact pathetic, that's really much more damaging than just telling them not to cry, because what we're doing is we're not valuing their intelligence and their capacity to actually have very healthy relationships, which is evident when they're 12, 13, 14, that they ask amazing questions, that they're reading things. You can even see it in your five-year-old. And so the idea is that we're not nurturing their full humanity, and then there's going to be problems. And yes, crying is obviously should be allowed, but the focus is not on crying. The focus is on nurturing their natural emotional and relational intelligence.
We've all spent time with boys of various ages, whether they're our children or our siblings or people in our lives. And I think this is often true of teenagers, is that they can look like they are not listening, or they're rolling their eyes, or they're, you know, the body language gives off, which is, I don't care what you're saying to me. But what I hear from you and your conversations with boys and listening to boys is that they are paying attention. It just doesn't look like they are.
Well, I would say I would actually push it a little further. I think there are many, and that's why I call it rebels with a cough.
Right.
I think they've been yelling at us adults for a long time, and we're just fundamentally not listening. And so their frustration with us is that we're simply not listening to them. For example, in high school, my daughter, the only thing they wanted is their good quality friendships. And my only questions to both of them constantly was, did you do your homework?
Right. I've been there, done that, right. Yes.
And how'd you do on the test?
Yeah.
Those are the only questions I asked their whole high school. And all they wanted and still want in their 20s is quality friendships. And so the fact is that we are not listening to young people at all. We're not listening to what they really want, which is deep, meaningful connection. We keep on valuing the wrong thing, meaning the things that actually doesn't allow them to connect deeply with others. And so I would say to parents, you know, teachers, employers, all grown-ups, I would say start listening and understanding not only them, but pay attention to your own, right? Listen to yourself, because oftentimes we want the same thing young people want. We're just so used to, right, disconnecting from our soft sides that we've convinced ourselves that friendships are less important than romantic relationships. But the reality is friendships are really important for all of us.
I wonder whether you think, and this is broadly speaking, almost culturally speaking, do you think there's a message that we're either afraid of boys or we don't like boys in this culture?
Well, we're definitely in a culture. I mean, the gender binary, the gender fight, right, that's happening now in this country between girls and boys and men and women is almost more serious and maybe more serious than the partisan divide. I mean, we definitely have figured out, you know, that we want to just blame the other side for their problems. So girls and women and some men blame men, and then some men blame women. And we just have to stop it, because it's neither side is at fault. Collectively, it's a collective cultural problem that we have to see that we can't just value one side of ourselves. We have to value both sides for everybody. And that's the only way we're going to create a thriving society. And the good news, to not be so negative about this, is the good news is that it's a natural capacity. We have it already within ourselves to solve our own problems. We're naturally hard and soft. We don't have to teach it. We just have to nourish it. And so the good news is that we already have these skills when we're young, and we just have to school our children and raise our children to value both sides of themselves and to definitely value friendships. And then we're going to be in a society that's much more thriving.
You're involved in the Science of Human Connection Lab, the Listening Lab, Transformative Interviewing. And you've mentioned listening, the importance of listening to young people. And we're talking largely about boys today, or teenage boys and young men, the importance of listening to them. I mean, we think we're listening, but what does real transformative interviewing and real listening look like and sound like?
Yeah. So we've done a listening project in schools for the past decade with all kids, not just boys and young men. And that the idea is to foster our interpersonal curiosity, our curiosity about the thoughts and feelings of other people. We don't value that as a culture. We feminize it and don't value it. So we have to nurture that curiosity. And what forms connection, what listening is actually listening with questions, with curiosity about the other person, not just listening for when I can talk or when can I add something in there or confirm what they say. But actually listening with, what do they think? What do they feel? What are their experiences? And so it means asking follow-up questions. We have 9 practices of listening with curiosity. We train kids and adults in these practices. It transforms their lives. It's because it's tapping into your natural capacity to wonder, look at the other person with wonder and say, what can I learn about you, but also about you, but also about me through you, by asking questions of you. So curiosity is essential, and listening with curiosity, like not oftentimes, apparently there's a new study that someone sent me. We spend only of the average person only listens to 25% of what the other person said. So we don't listen. Because we're not listening with a sense of what can I learn from them. We're listening to it with a sense of, do they confirm us, or, you know, we need to give them time to talk and then I'm going to talk. And so the idea is transforming the whole thing into a dialogue of curiosity. That's how you form connection.
I'm looking at the 9 practices, and it starts with a real question, which is not, did you do your homework tonight? What is a real question? Your kid comes home from school. What's a real question?
So this is so gorgeous, and we should do this in another interview, because it just that by itself is such a gorgeous question.
Yeah.
So when you ask young people what their real questions are, meaning a real question of something you're really curious about, not a good question, not a smart question, just what do you want? We have hundreds of them, but I'll give you a sample of them. Sure. Where do you feel safe? That's 12-year-old boys. Where do you feel safe? Where do you feel like you're listened to? What do you want most in life and why? You know, what do you value? Why do you value that? We did a study with NYU college students of like 600 college students, and most of them, 80% said they wish people would ask them questions. And when we asked them what questions, they said things like, what do you value? And when we asked them why do they want those questions asked, is they said, to be seen as I see myself, rather than how I'm stereotyped to be. So the point is that asking questions also breaks down stereotypes. It's a it's a diversity intervention, because you begin to actually see the full person's hard and soft sides naturally when you start to ask questions. So ask a real question. Don't ask what my students say, a BS question. Even when you say, what's your major? Some people are interested in what people's majors are, but oftentimes that's not really their question. They're like, oh, what do you care about? What are the things that you care about? Why do you care about that? That's the questions they really want to ask. They want to ask. I love, 12 and 13-year-old questions, boys included. If you listen to their questions, you're just mind-blowing. I've had boys ask me questions like, when I said I was divorced, they asked me about whether I was married. I said I was divorced. They said, do you still love your ex-husband? Does he know that? How do you show that? Do your children know that you still love your ex-husband? This is a classroom full of 12-year-old boys asking me those questions. Look how much we're missing when we don't engage with young people around their curiosities.
We've mentioned the word stereotype several times during this hour. Why are stereotypes feel so hardwired?
Well, it's not hardwired. The problem is we don't see it. We think the stereotypes are actually true. When we know, my daughter asked at 9 years old, why do we believe in things we know aren't true? And that's essentially, right? It's such a beautiful question. We actually believe these stereotypes are accurate. Like boys don't have feelings, or boys aren't naturally emotionally sensitive, or don't naturally want close friendships. So then we don't question it. If we actually listen, this is what I've been sort of barking at for a lot of adults over a long time. If we actually listen to young people of all different backgrounds to hear what they want, need, feel, experience, we actually naturally, the stereotypes just disappear, because nobody fits a stereotype. Nobody's a flat caricature of a boy. Nobody's a flat caricature of a black kid, a girl. Whatever identity you have. So the idea is, our stereotypes are never accurate of that entire group. Do we sometimes act like a stereotype? Absolutely. Absolutely. But are we a stereotype? Absolutely not. We're human. Humans aren't one-sided.
Well, here's a stereotype about men in sports, but let me ask it anyway. But do you think sports is a way that men do connect with each other?
Oh, absolutely. No, I think we have to reimagine everything. I think if it's a way to connect, and sports, my son was a soccer player, serious soccer player. That was definitely where he found all his friends, and his relationships with them, he ended up having good, fantastic relationships with them. And sports can sometimes be toxic for male relationships. But if you have a good coach, you have a good coach that knows what they're doing. It can be a beautiful place. Same. And I'm going to say something also very controversial. Same with the military. The military, actually, I've gotten this from a lot of people who have served. The military can be an incredible place where you learn to have a kind of love for your brothers or your sisters in the military in ways that you never had outside of the military. And when you leave the military, I've had military people say, you miss the relationships, you miss the connection. So even if it's in a sort of about war, there are spaces within there that is actually building relationships. So sports, the military, all those can be good places, as long as you have a leader that's actually recognizing, right, the importance of those relationships for well-being. And the same with classrooms can be a place, any context can be a place for building relationships, as long as you understand that should always be your priority. Nurturing positive relationships among the people you're with. That's it. That's it. That should be our only goal.
We have about a minute before we have to say goodbye, but, we talk a lot about this crisis of loneliness, which, is real. But you say we really have a crisis of connection caused by this culture we've been talking about that's kind of out of sync with our nature and with our needs. How do you fix culture in 40 seconds or less?
You do it by basically normalizing what I've just said. And I see the effect. You're already seeing it among young people. You're already seeing it. That once you normalize that they have hard and soft sides, everybody does, they start expressing both sides. And you're seeing it with what you started with Tim Walz's son, right? He would have never done that 10 years ago. He did that because actually we're becoming more accepting that all people have hard and soft sides. And the fact that the people who shamed him got shamed is exactly the sign that we are already changing as a culture. And now we just need to push it forward faster.
Well, Naomi Wei, thank you so much for joining us today on The Connection. And thanks for writing this book.
Thank you so much. And it was a pleasure to be interviewed by you.
Thank you so much. And again, the book is called Rebels with a Cause, Reimagining Boys, Ourselves, and Our Culture. And our guest, Naomi Wei, is a professor of developmental psychology at New York University, also founder of the Project for the Advancement of Our Common Humanity. Well, thank you for joining us today on The Connection. It airs every Friday and Sunday at noon right here on WHYY. You can always and also download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. And you can listen on the WHYY app. You can also follow us on Instagram and find us on Facebook. Also, check out our website, whyy.org/theconnection, for more information about upcoming shows and to sign up for our newsletter. Al Banks engineered today's show, and it's produced by Debbie Builder and Paige Murray Bessler. I'm Marty Moscoane. Again, thanks for joining us.